Top Stories, the head of the UN nuclear watchdog is in Iran ahead of Tehran's deadline to block snap inspection of its nuclear sites in response to U.S. sanctions. The UN condemns Myanmar's military junta for crackdown on anti-coup protesters after two people were killed during Saturday's protests. Also in headlines, French officials hint at tightening curfews and partial lockdowns due to a surge in the number of novel coronavirus cases in France. Welcome to the program. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency has arrived in Iran for talks on the eve of Tehran's deadline for U.S. sanctions to be lifted. Rafael Mariano Grossi was received in Tehran by Iran's ambassador to the IAEA, Kazem Gharib-Abadi, and spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Behruz Kamalvandi. Grossi says he is seeking a solution for the agency to continue its verification work in Iran. The country's parliament passed a law in December that requires the government to block IAEA's snap inspections from February the 23rd, among other measures, if U.S. sanctions are not lifted by then. Iran and the U.S. are locked in a standoff over salvaging the 2015 nuclear deal, with both sides calling on the other one to act first. Political analyst Eve Angler says the Biden administration should first lift sanctions against Iran, and then Tehran will fully comply with the 2015 nuclear deal.
I don't even really think this is about a negotiation between Washington and Tehran. I think it's just a matter of the Biden administration doing what it said it was going to do and returning to the JCPOA, which is really about lifting sanctions on Iran. Obviously, Iran is not going to comply with inspections and measures. It shouldn't be complying with inspections and measures based upon having sanctions lifted. So this is really a matter of it's in the Washington's court. I think the Biden administration should begin the process of lifting sanctions, and I think that Iran will respond in kind.
Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says the U.S.'s so-called maximum pressure policy against the Islamic Republic has failed. Araghchi stressed that the U.S. will become a JCPOA party again after it lifts sanctions, and the conditions existing before Washington's pullout from the nuclear deal prevail. Araghchi said Tehran is studying the European Union's proposal to hold an informal meeting of 4+1 with the United States and Iran and will respond to it in the future. Regarding Iran's deadline to block snap inspections of its nuclear sites, Araghchi said the UN watchdog's surveillance ability will be reduced by up to 30% if anti-Iran sanctions are not lifted. He reiterated that the measure does not mean Iran withdraws from the JCPOA. Yemen's Ansarullah movement says the battle for the province of Ma'arib is part of a national campaign to liberate the country from Saudi-led aggression and blockade. Ansarullah spokesperson Mohammed Abdesalam stressed that Yemeni people are determined to continue their resistance until every inch of their country is liberated. Ma'arib has been the scene of heavy fighting over the past weeks. Ansarullah forces and allied army units have been pushing against former regime loyalists backed by Saudi Arabia. The Daesh terror group has openly confirmed fighting alongside Saudi-backed mercenaries in Yemen. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war on its southern neighbor in March of 2015. The kingdom and its allies have also imposed a blockade that has hampered delivery of aid supplies to Yemen. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have once again condemned the recent normalization of ties between some Arab states and the Israeli regime, the Ruba Shabit reports.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip held a press conference aimed at expressing the refusal of the recent normalization of ties with Israeli regime. The conference comes as a code of ethics for Palestinian journalists and media institutes to stress the rejection for normalizing ties with Israel.
We condemn the recent normalization of ties with Israel. We held this conference as a code of ethics for journalists and media institutes to reveal the Israeli violations and normalization of ties with the Israeli regime. The normalization of ties remains a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
A number of Palestinian leaders, activists, and journalists attended the conference and condemned establishing Israeli relations, stressing that no deal can bring peace to Israel in the West Asia. Palestinian journalists and activists added that media has a significant role in conveying the true image of the inhumane Israeli regime and refused any normalization of ties with Israel in terms of media.
Normalizing ties with Israel is a way to justify the inhumane nature of Israel. The recent normalization of ties with Israel is a betrayal of the Palestinian cause, and we won't accept any recognition of Israel at the expense of Palestinians.
Palestinians call on Arab and Muslim nations to end these normalization of ties with Israel that aims to demolish the historical Palestinian cause.
Palestinian activists are all united to say that normalization of ties with Israel is a betrayal of all Palestinians. Media should stand against these attempts to demolish the Palestinian cause. All Arabs and Muslims should stop recognizing Israel as a state.
So far, a number of Arab states have normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. The move has sparked harsh criticism among the Muslim nations. Palestinians here stress they strongly refuse to recognize Israel and reject the normalization of ties with the Tel Aviv regime by certain countries. They say the resistance is ongoing and no deal can bring peace to Israel at the expense of Palestinians. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
The United Nations has condemned Myanmar's military junta for deadly crackdown on anti-coup protesters in the country. UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, called unacceptable the use of lethal force, intimidation, and harassment against peaceful demonstrators. The condemnation came after Myanmar's security forces used live ammunition to disperse protesters on Saturday. Volunteer emergency services said two people were killed and at least 20 injured in the city of Mandalay. The Southeast Asian nation has been the scene of street protests since the military seized power on February the 1st and detained civilian leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi. Three protesters have been killed and over 500 detained since then. The UN warns that Ethiopia's conflict-hit Tigray region faces, quote, a very critical malnutrition situation. In a report, the UN humanitarian agency says the situation is expected to deteriorate as households are limited to fewer meals every day. The report says a large portion of the nearly 6 million people in that region remain out of reach for aid. According to the report, this has led to severe acute malnutrition among children at sites, bureaucratic obstacles, and the presence of various armed actors as impediments to aid delivery. Tigray has witnessed intense fighting between government troops and forces loyal to the regional governing party over the past 3 months. Fugitive leaders accuse the government of looting and burning of crops to force them into surrender. The week-on-week number of new coronavirus cases in France has risen for a third consecutive day. On Saturday, France reported more than 21,000 new COVID-19 cases with over 180 deaths. The French health minister has expressed concern over the surge, saying the government would decide on tightening curfews or partial lockdowns. Meanwhile, in the UK, the COVID-19 death toll topped 120,000 after confirming 445 more fatalities. The country has so far reported some 4.1 million cases. The UK has suffered the deadliest outbreak in Europe. It is followed by Italy, which has registered nearly 2.8 million cases and over 95,000 deaths so far. Number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the U.S. has surpassed a dramatic milestone of 28 million. According to Johns Hopkins University, the U.S. has so far logged over 497,000 COVID-19 deaths. Despite vaccination programs underway, the U.S. remains the world's worst-hit country by the pandemic in terms of both cases and deaths. Elsewhere in the Americas, Brazil reported more than 1,200 new coronavirus deaths to raise its overall death toll to nearly 246,000. That is the second highest worldwide, as you may know. The number of infections in the South American nation is now approaching 10,140,000 after the country reported some 57,000 new cases. Let's get you back to the United States, where a stunning 45 million Americans have student loans, with the average debtor owing nearly $40,000. New President Biden has just rejected calls for major student debt relief, prompting an immediate backlash. Ramin Mazohiri is in Chicago.
In the United States, a university education is so expensive that it is the second biggest cause of debt, exceeding both credit card and auto loan debt. Only mortgage debt generates a greater amount of money for banks. 40% of student borrowers don't even graduate from university, but in good news, half of all American millennials, those aged 24 to 40 years old, do have a college degree. However, instead of providing a pathway to prosperous employment, college is often a downward spiral into crushing amounts of debt. The average student in the United States today leaves college with $37,000 of debt from student loans. University tuition has risen 1,200% since the late 1970s. Those younger than 24, called Generation Z, face the same prospect of expensive higher education combined with national economic stagnation since 2008. While on the campaign trail, Democrats raised major hopes with talk of an executive order canceling up to $50,000 in student debt. But President Joe Biden just declared, quote, "I will not make that happen," and he will only consider $10,000 in debt relief.
Student debt is parasitic. It's very right-wing. Joe Biden isn't centrist. He's right-wing. He's always been right-wing. If this person said that he had the capability to do it, which he does, and he said he does, and he's not going to do it because it sets the wrong precedent, then you're going to have a bunch of angry people.
Such huge amounts of debt has forced the millennial class to often delay mature steps, like buying a house, investing, pursuing a graduate degree, marriage, and children. That all depresses the economy, creates more social instability and disharmony, and all the while, economic inequality skyrockets in favor of the moneylenders. The student debt crisis is seemingly a uniquely American issue, but 45 million Americans owe almost $2 trillion in student debt. The immense scope of the problem seems to ensure that the nation's young adults will keep this issue in the limelight for years, or maybe even decades, until either debt relief is granted or wages massively rise. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Well, authorities in the U.S. state of Texas have restored power after days of outage due to an unprecedented cold blast and frigid temperature. Officials say utility operations have returned to normal, but tens of thousands are still without electricity as crews struggle to repair downed lines. Millions are also struggling without safe potable water due to frozen pipes. Officials have distributed fresh water and food to thousands of people, but long queues were seen outside churches, community centers, and in parking lots to pick up bottled water and packed food. Almost 70 people have reportedly lost their lives due to the cold wave. President Joe Biden has issued a disaster declaration for dozens of the hardest hit Texas counties, including, or instructing, I should say, officials to expedite relief efforts. Protests in Spain continue for a fifth consecutive night over the arrest and imprisonment of Catalan singer Pablo Hasél. In Barcelona, protesters vandalized shops and set fire to trash cans. They hurled projectiles at anti-riot police, who responded by firing foam bullets to disperse the crowd. Meanwhile, supporters of the singer held peaceful rallies in the Spanish capital, Madrid. Hasél was arrested on Tuesday and sentenced to 9 months in jail on charges of glorifying terrorism and insulting the Spanish monarchy in his songs and tweets. The arrest has sparked a debate on the freedom of expression in that country. Political analyst Sergio Castano says The detention of the Catalan singer is only part of the socio-political issues in Spain that have led to protests.
Pablo Hasél lives in Catalonia, and Catalonia celebrated elections last Sunday. As a result, the contest, political social contest in Catalonia, is sensible, and we can combine the situation. But there are other elements. For example, frustration of young people after a year of restriction for the pandemic, the lack of motivation and the lack of project for young people. Many of them consider that they have to go to the street and demand for reforms and for changes in the country. And at the same time, we have to analyze the consequences of independentism and the specific case of Pablo Hasél. There are different elements, and the result are these demonstrations, these protests, that during the last week are affecting the political system in Spain.
World leaders at the G7 summit have pledged millions of doses of the COVID-19 vaccine to poorer countries. However, this has been slammed as just another publicity stunt. The reality is that vaccine rollouts in the world's top economies are in overdrive, but it might take years for poorer nations to get their share. Campaigners say they want hard facts on how many doses are to be delivered and when.
The scramble for vaccines has exposed global inequality yet again. Rich economies, including the US, EU, and the UK, have collectively secured more than double the amount they need, 3 billion doses, and administered 75% of the vaccines actually in existence. But in dozens of countries, no one has been vaccinated.
We are more than a little bit concerned that there is or is to be hoarding and price gouging, as well as undue preference in some quarters. This being so, we at CARICOM have recently called upon WHO to immediately convene an international convention of the world's people's representatives to commiserate, explain, assist, and commit to a fair sharing of the available vaccine resources for the benefit of all humankind and not just the privileged, well-heeled few.
Accused of hoarding, world leaders at the G7 summit Friday tried to stave off criticism by making more pledges. The UK has boasted about leading the world out of the pandemic, but Boris Johnson says the UK comes first, and spare doses will only be given away once all British adults have got the jab. The projection for that is July. US President Joe Biden also used the G7 summit, his first international meeting, to redeem Washington's reputation as the largest contributor to organizations like the World Health Organization. Geopolitics is at play here. Russia and China have emerged as major vaccine suppliers, but the EU has been accused of failing to execute a fair and even rollout, forcing nations to look elsewhere for supplies. China and Russia have already shipped tens of thousands of doses of their COVID-19 vaccine to developing and underdeveloped countries as well. Meanwhile, the US has stopped short of donating from its own massive supply. Amnesty International says rich countries do themselves no favors by hoarding. In the end, if not enough people are immunized, the virus will have free range to mutate and outsmart the vaccines. Bianca Rahimi, London.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first grade. My dad, who is from India,
listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 21st, 2021. I'm Atefer Fani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So, dear listeners, contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports, as you may know, are very useful and important to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us. However, as you may know, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus around the world, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. Sending any material, including paper QSL cards, on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Alejandro Philly Munchak from Argentina, Abdul Alim from India, and Jay Hojibens from Belgium. I wish I'm, I've pronounced these names because these reception reports are from different countries. I wish I pronounced the names correctly. Thanks a lot. We appreciate you, Alejandro, Abdul Alim, and Hojibens. Thanks a lot. And I truly appreciate those of our dear listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, which here I mention their names, and later during the program I will read their emails and letters, including Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Also, we have an email from Shanti Kumari from India. And here we have an email from Poland. This email is from Perez Misla Zoladek. Also, here there is an email from Giovanni Fasinda from Italy. And the last but not the least is an email from Howard Barnett from England. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, dear listeners. After a short music, I will be back with all these kind messages. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Sultan Mahmoud says, "Dear staff, Assalamu alaikum. Hope you are well by the grace of God. The news is that on the occasion of the 42nd anniversary of the victory of Islamic Revolution in Iran, IRIB English Radio greets all the friends of the revolution. I heard an audio clip about how Iran changed after Islamic Revolution from your website. This report was very informative. Basically, the main mission of the West is to subdue Iran and protect the regime of Israel. In the past, the United States would resort to various tactics to save the Israeli regime, an illegally occupying state. They see Iran as a major obstacle for reaching their vicious goals, because while many countries in the West Asia region are trying to maintain diplomatic relations with the Israeli regime, Iran is the only country that has sided with the oppressed Muslims in Palestine. Every effort is being made to restore their rights. I wish you all good health and prosperity. Well, salam and greetings to you, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. And I do express my appreciation to you for sending us this email. Yes, as you mentioned in your email, this year, February 10th, was the 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And on this occasion, IRIB English Radio broadcast many different programs on the 42nd anniversary of the victory of Islamic Revolution in Iran, and we are very happy that you enjoyed the programs. As you said, you found our programs very informative. Thanks a lot. Of course, our efforts has always been and is providing the best quality of broadcast for our dear listeners from around the world. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar, again, thank you for writing to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And from India, we have an email from Shanti Kumari. Shanti Kumari from India says, "Hello, I congratulate all the listeners on New Year 2021. May the new year be full of peace for the people around the world. I'm glad for being one of your radio stations listener, and I request you to organize a quiz contest for your listeners, because nowadays many radio stations organize a competition, and I guess it would be a good idea for your radio to hold one. I hope you will bring good news in this regard for your friends this year. Also, I would like to request you to include this letter in your listeners' special program. Thank you. Salam and greetings to you, Shanti Kumari from India, one of our dear listeners. And lots of thanks for writing to us in IRIB English Radio. We also wish you all the best. And we wish you and all listeners of IRIB English Radio the best in 2021. Of course, peace, especially peace, health, joy, and love. And you suggested a quiz contest. This is a good idea. And we inform our producer, Mr. Khoshnavisan, about this idea. Maybe we have one in the future, a competition, as you suggested. Anyway, wish you all the best in 2021. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future, Shanti Kumari from India. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with the rest of letters and emails from around the world. Stay tuned. Welcome back. You just heard a piece of music from Iran, which is related to south of Iran, and I hope you enjoyed it. And here we have a message from Przemyslav Zoladek from Poland. It was a little hard for me to pronounce your name, Zoladek from Poland. Zoladek from Poland says, "Dear Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio, I would like to report the reception of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the central part of Poland, 80 kilometers southwest of Warsaw. It was a great honor to receive your signals from Tehran here in my country. Keep up the good work. All the best and greetings from Poland." Salam, Zoladek from Poland, and I sent you our deepest thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. We are so glad that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in your region. As you said, you are in central part of Poland, that is 80 kilometers southwest of Warsaw. It's also a great honor for us in IRIB English Radio to have you with us as a listener. Zodalek from Poland, write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Wish you all the best. Also from Italy, we have an email from Giovanni Facinda. Giovanni Facinda from Italy says, greetings to all the staff of IRIB English Radio. My name is Giovanni Facinda. I live in Irvine, Torino, Italy. I would like to report my listening reception. Please, I would like to receive a QSL card confirming my listening, if it is possible, from your side. Thank you very much. Salam, Giovanni Facinda from Italy. Ciao. And thank you very much for sending us this email. And regarding your request about sending QSL card, as you may know, IRIB English Radio has temporarily halted sending any material, including paper QSL cards and the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio due to coronavirus. And but as you may know, as soon as the protocols are removed, we will get back to our normal tradition of sending these items to our dear listeners. Anyway, Giovanni Facinda from Italy, why don't you tell us your views about our broadcast? In the future emails, please tell us which programs you like the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Giovanni Facinda from Italy. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Howard Barnett from Northampton, England. Howard says, dear friends at IRIB English Radio, tonight I tuned into your radio station via the internet from 1920-2020 GMT, and I heard you with excellent reception, except for a short break in transmission. What I heard was first a station announcement, and this was followed by some music. Then came the news, which included the following details. There were mass protests in Yemen's capital city, Sana'a, and many other cities over the U.S. I don't know if you verify reception reports via the internet, but if you do, then a QSL card along with anything else you care, send me. Will be very much appreciated. Send to address above. Thank you. Yours sincerely. First of all, salam, Howard Barnett from England, and lots of gratitude to you for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. I hope you're doing fine. So it seems that you've already received the signals of IRIB English Radio in your region, Northampton, England. And that's great. It seems that, first of all, as you said, you received a station radio, you know, a station announcement followed by music and then the news. That's great. In your future emails, please tell us which programs you like the best, and generally tell us your views about our programs. Howard Barnett from Northampton, England. Thanks a lot. Dear listeners, time tells me we have to skip to the next section of our program. That is this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
Hello there. Hello, everybody in Iran. I hope everybody's okay out there. My name is Adam Santa. I'm from Leicester in England. I am a frequent listener of IRIB. I've been tuning in on the shortwave for about a year now and again whenever I get time. I enjoy the show, I enjoy the content. It's a very interesting show. I enjoy hearing about the listeners from around the world. And I hope that everybody is doing well this summer. I think the content is pretty good. I particularly like the interview segments. It's quite interesting when you get people from different parts of the world there. It's quite interesting to hear their perspective on things, simply because we don't really get that in any other format, really. That's one of the things I enjoy about shortwave radio, is that you can guarantee that sooner or later you're going to pick up a station that has some kind of different perspective on things. So it's quite interesting to do that. Yeah, I would just like to say around the world, I hope you're doing well. Continue listening to IRRD because they're doing a great job. Keep in contact with them. Keep the shortwaves active. I know that the shortwaves aren't exactly as busy as they used to be, so we need to keep that going. And I hope everybody is doing well.
And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special This Sunday program. Keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The debate.
Satellite images show that Israel is carrying out a significant expansion of its Dimona nuclear facility in Negev Desert. Now, this is the same location where it makes the fissile material for its nuclear arsenal. In this edition of the debate, we will be discussing Israel's policy of deliberate ambiguity about its nuclear arsenal and the support that it receives from the silence of world powers.
Satellite images of Israel's top-secret nuclear site, Dimona, shows it is undergoing a major expansion. An independent group of arms control and non-proliferation experts, known as the International Panel on Fissile Material, published the images in which significant construction work is visible. The panel says a section of the complex under construction is several hundred meters from the reactor and reprocessing plant. The purpose of the construction is not known. The construction appeared to have started in early 2019 or late 2018. Israel's Dimona nuclear facility is located near the southern city of Dimona in the Negev Desert. The site, which is widely believed to be key to Israel's nuclear arms manufacturing program, was built with covert assistance from the French government in the 1960s. Though Israel has acknowledged the existence of the Dimona nuclear reactor, it has never confirmed nor denied the purpose of the facility. Reports strongly indicate that Dimona manufactures nuclear weapons. To this day, Israel has never acknowledged possessing a nuclear arsenal. Instead, it has maintained a policy of nuclear ambiguity. The Federation of American Scientists estimate that Tel Aviv has around 90 warheads made from plutonium produced in the Dimona heavy water reactor. In 2008, former President Jimmy Carter said Israel holds at least 150 nuclear weapons, the first time a U.S. president publicly acknowledged Israel's atomic arsenal.
The United States has more than 12,000 nuclear weapons, and the Soviet Union has about the same. And as you know, Great Britain and France have several hundred, and Israel has 150 or more.
Other sources, however, put the number at over 400. Tel Aviv has always turned a deaf ear to international calls for nuclear transparency. With the support of the United States and other Western countries, the occupying regime has even refused to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. While Tel Aviv constantly calls for pressure in countries like Iran over their nuclear activities, none of Israel's nuclear facilities are subjected to IAEA inspections. Experts believe Israel's nuclear activity is the main cause of instability in the region and a proof of West's double standards vis-a-vis nukes.
Now, to continue this discussion, we're joined by peace activist and political commentator Brian Terrell and also anti-Zionist activist and commentator Mick Napier. Now, let's begin with our first guest, Mr. Brian Terrell. Mr. Terrell, Israel built the Dimona reactor in the 1950s with extensive and clandestine help from the French, while world powers have turned a blind eye on its nuclear activities ever since. Why are world powers not so concerned about this major security threat?
Well, I think the term deliberate ambiguity, or it's been called the worst kept secret in the world, really a secret. It's a lie because it is so transparent. I think it's the blind eye is turned because Israel has been functioning as a client state of the West and in the region. And it's not just a lie, it may be one of the most dangerous and irresponsible and destructive deceptions ever. It does put the whole area in risk. And as there's the arms race, just as after World War II, it was the United States having nuclear weapons, the first country, the only country to ever use them. That is what drove the Soviet Union to get nuclear weapons in kind. And I don't believe there is a similar race going on in the Middle East, but if there ever will be, it will be because it's driven by Israel's nuclear weapons production and not by the other nations.
Thank you very much. Let's bring in Mr. Mick Napier. Now, Mr. Napier, what do you believe to be true here? Now, in May 2008, as we saw in the package, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter confirmed that Israel had at least 150 atomic weapons in its arsenal. Why has the West failed to do something about the 60-plus-year-old nuclear elephant in the room?
I think there's two reasons. One, if we look at 1973, the war between Egypt and Israel, Israel came quite close to losing it. And we know that the communications between Israel and the USA included a threat by Israel, and it's not the first threat. They had discussed earlier detonating a nuclear weapon. They didn't do it, but they had discussed detonating a nuclear weapon in the Sinai to warn the Egyptians. But there was communications between Israel and the USA, and the USA was to a degree blackmailed because Israel threatened that it might use nuclear weapons on Cairo if it were to be losing the war, and at one stage it was. It never happened, but I think there is this aspect that should not be, shouldn't be lost sight of, that Israel does actually threaten its allies with the possibility of using a nuclear weapon if it loses a war, in order to make sure that America, Germany, and other states provide it with massive quantities of weapons to give it an edge over any coalition of Arab powers. So Israel's a dangerous possessor of nuclear weapons. By the way, there's no question that they have nuclear weapons. I was involved here in Scotland in an election campaign for an Israeli nuclear technician called Mordechai Vanunu, who was later kidnapped from Rome because he revealed to British newspapers from his experience inside the Dimona nuclear plant, he revealed that Israel was a very, very substantial possessor of nuclear weapons. So that's not in doubt. But I think Israel has shown time and time again how dangerous it is as a possessor of nuclear weapons, not only by actual threats to use the weapons, threats made to the USA and threats which made their way to the government in Cairo as well, but also because it's Israel in 1975 had Shimon Peres, who later won a Nobel Peace Prize, met with delegates from the South African military, the apartheid regime, and offered to sell nuclear weapons to the apartheid regime in South Africa. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is public domain. We have the photographs, we have the testimonies, and so on. So Israel is a possessor of nuclear weapons. That possession, that monopoly in the Middle East, is protected by the USA and by the West, at the same time as they're also being intimidated by Israel. It's a very, very dangerous situation, and everybody knows the reality, despite this nonsense of deniability from Tel Aviv.
Exactly, and as you mentioned, also, in order to confirm what you just said, former CIA Director Robert Gates said during his 2006 Senate confirmation hearing for the Secretary of Defense that Iran is surrounded by, quote, powers with nuclear weapons, including the Israelis, to the West. It seems that the U.S. and Europe are deliberately turning a deaf ear to the threat coming from Israeli nuclear weapons. Mr. Terrell, what do you think is the reason for this hypocrisy?
Well, the hypocrisy, historically, it's used our Israel bombed nuclear reactors in Iraq in 1981, Syria 2007. They said that there was weapons, it was connected to some kind of weapons production. At the same time, the United States this year has announced making 80 new plutonium pits for the first time, the core of a nuclear weapon, producing more. And we are, the United States in 2015 pledged $1 trillion over 10 years for the life extension of the nuclear weapons that we possess now and development of new nuclear weapons. So there is an arms race going on. There are more nuclear weapons being built, as we see in Des Moines.
Well, we seem to have a bad connection there, Mr. Terrell. Let's bring in Mr. McNapier. Now, Mr. Napier, as Mr. Terrell also mentioned, the countries that actually assisted Israel in making these nukes include the U.S., France, Germany, Britain, Norway. And all of these have nuclear weapons themselves, and they've never insisted for Israel to join the NPT. Why?
Well, if I may correct you, they don't all have nuclear weapons. Norway doesn't, but Britain and France most certainly do. Germany doesn't. But, yeah, why have they taken this attitude towards Israeli nuclear weapons? I'd have to say there is a slight contradiction. There have been feeble complaints or distancing by the European countries compared to the USA. A few years ago, Netanyahu thanked the Obama Secretary of State, John Kerry, for preventing the convening of a United Nations conference on a nuclear-free Middle East. Every country in the Middle East wanted the conference to take place. The UN wanted the conference to take place, including Britain and France. The only countries which opposed it were Israel and the USA. And as I say, Netanyahu thanked Kerry for preventing that awful outcome of a nuclear-free Middle East. So there's no question that there is an appetite across the Middle East, certainly by the people, but even by many of the states, to have a nuclear-free Middle East. Israel and the USA have prevented that wish from being fulfilled. And you have to ask the question, why? I mean, in terms of, to answer the question why, what is Israel? Israel isn't the response of Western guilt about the Holocaust. Not at all. It's a strategic alliance. I forget the Israeli Prime Minister's name, and it might come back to me, but he said famously, Israel is, and he was such a racist, Israel is a villa in the jungle, he said, meaning it's an extension of Western power into the region. And this is a tradition starting from Herzl, the founder of Zionism, even before the State of Israel is founded. They see themselves as an extension of Western civilization against the savages, the Arabs and the Iranians and others in the Middle East. Forgive my language, but this is what the villa in the jungle metaphor actually means. And therefore, the West wants Israel to be able to have a military power to repeat 1967 if it's necessary. In 1967, Israel smashed the armies of Egypt, Syria and Jordan, and made Western control of the resources of the region, the oil, safe for a generation. It headed off that threat from local people to have local control of their resources. And the nuclear question has to be seen in that context. Israel uses nuclear weapons not primarily to threaten to use them, but to tell other countries that they always have this in reserve. You don't mess with us. We are capable of overwhelming violence if anyone challenges Israeli. But, essentially Israel is a projection of Western domination of the Middle East. And this is not a conspiracy theory. We can see this from before Sykes-Picot. We can see this from before Balfour, why the Zionist project was endorsed in the first place. And there's an absolute continuity. It's not, sometimes there are disagreements. President Eisenhower, the Americans, kicked Israel out of Egypt in 1956 because they colluded with France and Britain. At that time, the dominant powers in the Middle East, although declining. But today, Israel has changed its sponsorship from these two fading powers to the USA and acts as an extension of their military power.
Mr. Napier, I'm sorry to cut you off right there. But since you mentioned the Arab world, actually, let's not forget that the Arab world itself is now growing impatient with the situation, and Egypt in particular has threatened to walk out of the NPT unless there's some kind of progress in creating a Middle East, nuclear-free Middle East. So how long do you think this silence can last? And if you could please make it quick, because we also want to have Mr. Otero's views, and we're running out of time.
Of course. One cannot predict. When do these when will this consensus end? And you're right, the Egyptian government has some sense that they shouldn't be completely subordinate to Israel. After all, they enforce the siege of Gaza together with Israel. They may see themselves as partners, but not as inferiors. So they chafe at the reality of Israel having a nuclear monopoly with which to dominate the region. So even that alliance is under serious tension. How long will it last? Who knows? But it's certainly a lie which has been promoted in Western capitals, that Israel needs nuclear weapons and doesn't have them and may have them. It's the line at the moment, but it could change if there were serious, if the states in the Middle East moved together against Israel's nuclear monopoly.
Thank you very much. Let's bring back Mr. Terrell. Now, Iran's foreign minister has tagged the U.S. president, the IAEA, the British, French, and German heads of state in a tweet reminding them that Dimona is the region's only nuclear bomb factory. Would you expect any kind of reaction?
I would hope for one. I don't expect one. Now, because of this deliberate ambiguity, as it's called, which brings the entire, there's no reason for Egypt to remain in the non-proliferation treaty. There's no reason for anyone, as long as a blind eye is turned to one country. This makes the entire nuclear proliferation treaty, the entire effort to disarm the world of nuclear weapons renders it incoherent. This is absolutely necessary for the fate of the world that Israel is being held responsible for the nuclear weapons that of course it has and that it's using every day by the implied threat. Just as was said, that these weapons could be used at any time is entirely destabilizing and destructive.
So do you see any practical solution to make Israel accountable?
I think right now in the United States, it's very important for U.S. citizens to tell our government that it needs to at least go back to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that Donald Trump destroyed. That policy, that the Trump's policy was totally. Politically, it's nonsense, and we've got nothing to lose by stepping back and going back to the status quo of the Obama years, which was bad enough, dangerous enough, but we need to lift the sanctions against Iran. We need to demand that Israel come clean on its nuclear weapons, and even then, that's just a start. That's only going to be a start to make the world safer.
Now, Mr. Napier, do you believe that there's a practical solution to make Israel accountable?
It's possible. I think it would depend, it would rely on a joint agreement, however minimal, by powers in the region to force the issue of Israel's nuclear weapons, to force it onto the public agenda. It's possible because America is pulling down its interest in the Middle East. It's beginning to focus on the possibility of a conflict with China, some sort of conflict, hopefully short of all-out war. But it's beginning to shift attention away from the Middle East. The danger there, it relies more on the Israeli surrogate, on Israel as an extension of Western power into the region, just as it did after the Vietnam War when America was being defeated and they decided that to avoid U.S. troops in the region, they would treat Israel as America's unsinkable aircraft carrier. So it's a dangerous period, but it's possible. But it would mean active diplomacy by all the powers in the region, Egypt, Iran, etc., and then we'd have to see. But it's a very dangerous situation, that's without any doubt.
Finally, Mr. Napier and Mr. Terrell, both of you, if you could please wrap this up as quickly as you can. With a long history of aggression that Israel has, is it logical to allow Israel to expand its nukes? Mr. Napier.
Of course not. Israel is the only country, I think, in the world which has attacked all of its neighbors at least once and often much more than once. So it shouldn't be in possession of its so-called conventional weapons, because they are used to colonize Palestine, and there's no reason why the borders of Palestine will be the limit of Israeli ambitions. So everyone across the Middle East has an incentive to make sure that Israel does not become any stronger and is weakened, because they are a threat to the people of the region.
Thank you very much, Mr. Terrell.
Well, I agree, and I think that the